top Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. Back in studio here in 2025. We have a lot to discuss, being the series of events and the normal transition of power, which is always newsworthy. This hour, Emily Campagna will be joining me in studio, and Governor Sununu, now former governor of New Hampshire. That's going to be interesting, too. So we got a big, big hour coming your way. Also, we expect to get a lot of breaking news throughout the show as we look into two simultaneous investigations on the New Year's Eve attack. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
You know, words as much as weapons do shape history. We're seeing a president who talks a lot, but doesn't have the will to do anything about it. We're going to get somebody back who's resetting American dominance in the world for the American people.
Yep, make them fear us as we talk about the Biden-Trump transition. That's what immediately has to happen. Our allies must stop taking us for granted. Our enemies must begin to worry about what we will do next.
Number two.
You can pull all my fingernails out. You can shove bamboo up in them. You can start cutting off my fingers. I am not voting for Mike Johnson tomorrow. And you can take that to the bank.
Good job, Tom Massey. Man, I respect you. That really takes a lot of guts. Show me you have learned something. The speaker vote today. Will Republicans blow up Johnson like they did McCarthy? I say not only should they keep Mike, but also change the rules to make it hard to oust Mike. I'll explain.
Number one.
Initially after 9/11, the FBI was in. They were everywhere looking. They caught those guys in upstate New York by doing that human intelligence. But they've pulled back over the past several years. And they need to put that back into place.
Congressman Mark Green, a veteran, New Orleans attacks and Las Vegas explosion seem like separate events now as more facts come out about these terrorist acts. Why I believe we have to go back on the 2001 terror watch mindset. And that's really what I think. I mean, first off, I'll tell you what we know now. No, this guy, Shamsuddin Jabbar, New Orleans terror attacker. Number one, he acted alone. They were wrong about that. Number two, there is no connection to Las Vegas. They did plant IEDs, two of them, I guess, time devices to further foment the terror. His goal was also to hit them twice, run over as many people as possible, and then have a second attack plan. And that was get out shooting with a rifle. And he had it. This is what ISIS talks about. They write about. This is what they foment. That's what they wanted. So he did exactly what they wanted. I hope he's happy. He's dead. Innocent people's lives are ruined. Their loved ones are forced to pick up the pieces. They also found two laptops in his Airbnb. They found a bomb-making station in his trailer. He lived in a dilapidated, horrible community over in Houston. He has two ex-wives, not making child support payments, near or at bankruptcy, served in the military. You see him driving around. I'm sure we're going to see video of him spying the route and the blocks and where to leave the IEDs and the way he was able to. The other story is where he was able to beat New Orleans security means. I mean, these bollards were supposed to sit and block vehicles from going up and down roadways when you decided you wanted to block it and when you wanted to block the sidewalk. They had them in place in 2017. They stopped working in 2019. And they said, did security experts, a private firm, first page of the New York Times today, said, you got to get these things to go up and down. And the problem was, believe it or not, I know it sounds like a joke, but the beads that they throw out off the balconies on Mardi Gras just about every day, and they got into these bollards. So they broke them. They were getting them fixed by the Super Bowl. Not really good enough. What was happening in Las Vegas? It turns out this 19-year veteran, they call him a Rambo-like warfighter. He's been in Afghanistan twice, Tajikistan, Ukraine, stationed in Germany, special operator. I guess, according to reports, personal life a mess. His wife, he remarried twice, and evidently had a fight. They broke up. Next thing you know, he's going to Turbo. He's renting a car. And he's using that car, that Tesla Cybertruck, to blow up in front of the Trump Hotel. Believe it or not, they say he was a big Donald Trump fan. Here's the FBI Deputy Assistant Director, Christopher Wray. Cut one.
14 innocent victims were killed in this senseless attack, and at least 35 are injured. First and foremost, let me be very clear about this point. This was an act of terrorism. It was premeditated and an evil act.
Look, I'm not the one who said it wasn't a terror act. To me, of course it was a terror act. I was shocked when they came out with the initial assessment that said this is not a terrorist act. Which, look, I know you can't have it both ways. You can't want quick answers. And when they give you answers that turn out wrong, be critical. But I can say when you come out and say, instead of just saying, we don't know who did this and what was behind it and the motivation, they came out and said this is not a terrorist attack. I don't know why they say that. One thing is clear, and I know it's not possible to stay on the 9/11 footing, looking around the corner for every next bin Laden wannabe. But we got to go back to focusing on the Islamic threat that's here. I mean, it's happened in New Zealand, happened over in Germany. We see it happens in France. This is what they want. This keeps them going, keeps money flowing. And have other people say, well, this is success. I think I could be a big deal. I could go into mighty America and start blowing things up. Cut three.
We know that he specifically picked out Bourbon Street. Not quite sure why. I mean, I think one can assume that it was lots of people, New Year's Eve, with a target for an attack. That's the stuff in the coming days as far as that path to radicalization that we're really going to be digging into and making a priority of. So what I can tell you right now is that he was 100% inspired by ISIS.
All right. Why? I don't know. Nothing else. Now, I heard two things. He got a half brother that said they were born Muslim. He's got another brother that was quoted in the New York Times yesterday and said he was born a Christian and converted, went over to Egypt. You know, the one thing that comes to mind that we always found out through our intelligence apparatus, through our operatives, Homeland Security, as well as the Department of National Intelligence, the CIA. When you go over and you travel over to places like Egypt, Saudi Arabia, any places like Pakistan, failed states like Afghanistan, Syria, they watch you and they light up. And when Egypt, they got bad sections to Egypt. They're worried about their own people. They know they got a terrorist problem. This guy evidently is going over there. If he's hanging out with terrorists, there was a time in which the intelligence apparatus in Egypt would tell ours. Did they just not do it? Have we just not shown any interest? Have we not kept those relations going? Are they mad because of the actions of Israel in the region? I don't know. Here's Tom Cotton, cut eight.
This terrorist appears to have been radicalized well after he left the army, but it is the case that sometimes bad apples slip through the system in our military. Remember Nadal Hassan, the Fort Hood shooter from about 15 years ago. However, the Biden administration for 4 years has stuck its head in the sand to the threat of Islamic terrorism. If you recall, President Biden and the Director of National Intelligence and the Secretary of Defense have all said the biggest threat we face is from racially and ethnically motivated terrorism, specifically white supremacist terror. They launched a witch hunt in our military to try to find all these apparent white supremacists in our military, and they could barely find any at all. Most of what they found were criminal gang members. It's just another example of the misplaced priorities of this administration.
Yeah, I mean, we just got to change. It doesn't mean every administration is going to prevent every terror attack, but you got to put things in place to minimize the chances of it happening. We watched Christopher Wray repeatedly over the course of the last 3-4 years talk about the worry, how many of crossing on the FBI terror watch list on our southern border, the worry they have overseas, and they finally struck twice in the same night. So Emily Campagno joins me in a moment before she joins Outnumbered later on, and then Governor Chris Sununu. Big hour. So glad you're here.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Fox News Audio presents the Fox Nation Investigates podcast, The Menendez Brothers, Monsters or Misunderstood.
We have evolved to understanding that this kind of stuff can happen.
Judge Jeanine Pirro and a panel of experts break down the Menendez Brothers' new fight for freedom, and their defense attorney explains why he's optimistic he can clear their names.
Are these convicted killers monsters or just misunderstood?
Listen and follow starting January 7th at foxtruecrime.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
This is why getting President Trump's cabinet in is so important. Mm-hmm. We need Governor Noem at DHS. We need Cash Patel at FBI. We need Pete Hegseth at DOD. This is an across-the-government look. Marco Rubio at State, and of course, Ratcliffe at yep. CIA, and Gabbard, Tulsi Gabbard at DNI. That has to be in place day one, guys, because this is a moment in transition of vulnerability, and President Trump is going to project, because he is a leader of strength, the narrative that we project on day one will be just important, and that's having our people in place.
Right, and people are worried naturally about the transition and the gap in power and people getting used to it. But Mike Waltz does say he's getting great cooperation from Jake Sullivan. Joining me now is Emily Campagno, fresh off a three-hour visit on Fox and Friends, filling in for Ainsley. And then you said, Brian, I need to talk to you again. And I said, only on radio or television or some type of medium. And we agreed on this.
My favorite was tossing to America Reports instead of Newsroom, because that's the show I tossed to after Outnumbered. I apologize to Newsroom. It was so fun being with Kilmeade all morning. And then bonus right now. Thanks for having me.
So you have Outnumbered coming up at noon.
Yes.
Right. Do you have any idea what you're leading with?
We are leading with the speaker vote, which is that's set to begin at noon. And
go ahead.
It's a big story today. I mean, the reality is that our legislative body can't function, cannot do anything. They are all still just simply speaker elect and congressman elect until they elect the speaker. And we've been discussing all morning sort of the holdouts and what that means. But the reality is that there's only one vote that can stray. And this is the time to show unity. This is the time to show up for the American people.
We've never seen margins this small. I just wonder if think about 6 months from now, 7 months from now. Is everything going to come down to, Tom Massey's not going to want to do this. Mm. Or, the Freedom Caucus is, that's where the rubber hits the road. Tim Burchett, so we're going to be dealing with constantly. When I think you and I are from team sports and you say to yourself, I got to give this one up here. Or I'm going to go in and fight behind the scenes, try to push and pull, promise down the line. But if you're going to come out and go, I'm not voting for it, I have no patience for you. If this is not my style, my everything. But the one thing that, and I asked Jim Jordan this, so can you get regular order? Can you just do your appropriations bills through the committee where people feel empowered and then they're done, they hand it out, and then you go negotiate with the other side?
Totally. And that's such a great point that you say, because at the end of the day, all of these individuals are representing us. They're representing constituents. You have to ask yourself, with all of that type of sort of petulant behavior and the holdouts at this pregame phase, who is that serving? To your point, who is that serving? Is it a team sport or is it an individual sport? Because last time I checked, this moment, the Massey, the whole, that is not serving certainly the American people and certainly the GOP, which right now we have the chance to do so much. So why don't we get off on the right foot rather than exhausting us like last year? Last year was unacceptable.
I hear you. And Mike Waltz, who's just speaking right now, one of the few that can speak on the new Trump team. And he's saying, I don't care if he's using it. Use this to push the Senate to confirm these people.
Yes.
I mean, to get the Treasury in place. To get all the people he just mentioned, John Ratcliffe at CIA, Tulsi Gabbard, get it out there. I think Pete starts off first, I believe, on the 8th, 8th or 9th, we're going to see Pete's testimony. And then they're going to take another day if they need it. And then they're going to go vote. And then, just a lot of it is going to be the minorities just saying, I'm not going to be around Friday. Can't do it on Friday. Can't do this. Or we're going to put this on the side. We're going to do this first. And that delay hurts the country. I think for both sides, Republicans didn't do it as bad as Democrats, but I think it hurts.
I agree. And I think the flies in the ointment that can't be allowed to fester. We've talked a lot about the bad habits that have been allowed to cultivate and foment during this current administration. And I think this kind of thing needs to be nipped in the bud. And that's where collaboration, that's where, again, that sports analogy, where your teammates step in and say, get in line right now. This is not the fight that we are paid to do. Not yet. There's a fight coming up. Believe me, the next 4 years are going to be a fight, especially the next, I would say, year and a half really is when they're going to be demonstrating the potential right now. So take that fight to the mat. And then you know that you have unity on either sides rather than, for some reason, these flies in the ointment being allowed to have so much power unfettered.
So I got to ask you about, one of the guys that's emerging, I think he's going to be a real factor, is Mark Wayne Mullen in Oklahoma. The president really likes him. He does a lot of his heavy lifting. Here's what he's saying. When people start giving Republicans a hard time about RFK or Tulsi or Pete. This is what he says. Keep in mind, cut 29.
What's aggravating to me is these same Democrats that are sitting there complaining, saying that these cabinet picks and these director picks aren't qualified, are the same people that literally put in beat Buttigieg over over Secretary of Transportation. His only qualification was to be mayor. And then they put Rachel, who is the assistant secretary inside the HHS, who it can't figure out what pronouns mean. And these are the same people that put Sam in place, the one that was picking up luggage off a carousel, not once but twice, and was arrested for it. These are the same people that confirmed these Democrats are the ones that confirmed those individuals. And they're saying that Tulsi Gabbard, who is a lieutenant colonel in the United States Army right now, isn't qualified.
And it's a joke, right? I mean, it's about Rachel Levine.
I love when representatives come out and so succinctly and perfectly encapsulate exactly what's happening, because he's exactly right. And not to mention the vice president, who only had certain offices but no experience to speak of whatsoever. And of course, there was the mutiny that all of a sudden put her in place for the presidency for this election over Biden. He's absolutely right. And I think the other alternative to that, other than those virtue signaling who just wanted to check boxes, is the establishment. You know, so you want the old guard in there? Here's the reality. Everyone is going to always find fault with everything happening on the GOP side. But the indicator here is giving them actually something to talk about. And the reality is all of these nominations do not have anything. So let them gripe, because the confirmations are going to go through, but it can only happen based on what we were just talking about a moment ago, which is that unity. So I feel, you know, the point I'm trying to make is that I expect arrows to come from across the aisle, whether it's founded or not, but I don't expect arrows to come from within our side of the aisle. This is not the time to have infighting, not the time to have that petulant sort of flanks resisting.
Ready for a non-sequitur?
Yes.
We were talking about the level of noise in restaurants. Yes. This one local story in New York City, these people are so upset, they signed a petition to put the decibel level before you go into a restaurant. It always bothers me. I don't want to go there because you can't talk. If you're going out with friends, why go? You feel the same way.
Yes. One of the restaurants that was on the list that sort of set this off is one that we talk about all the time, saying if someone offers to go there, say, no, it's too loud. It is truly prohibitive. And in the fall and the spring, we can eat outside. It's not a big deal. But in the winter and in the summer, we don't have as much choice. Nothing is more agonizing than trying to go out to dinner with your family and you can't hear anything and you're screaming and then you're paying New York prices.
Right.
I mean, just it's literal agony, the whole thing.
But this is the most unexpressed complaint I think I've ever heard.
Yes.
Right?
But everyone knows it.
Everyone knows, but we don't talk about it.
Totally.
I feel good having talked about it. Right?
I feel great. Also, it's the kind of thing that I think we're not asking every restaurant to install soundproof foam. What we're asking is just to know ahead of time.
So
what's
go.
Wrong with that transparency, right?
Right.
It's like Yelp.
Right.
For decibels.
Yelp for noise.
Yeah.
Yelp, yes. Yelp should include that as part of the rating.
Totally.
A little loud. Went to Nashville 3 weeks ago. We walked out of two restaurants because the band. I'm not scouting bands. I can't sign them. I can't book them in anything. So you got to either lower it or I have to leave.
I feel like this conversation is tell us you're old without saying you're old. Both of us are complaining about noise and bands. No one wants to invite us over ever
down.
Again.
I think we helped America.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
And the interesting thing about Republicans is they tend to represent their districts more. I think Democrats line up together and represent their ideology more. And it's the difference between the two parties. And so when we have a super thin majority, it's really tough to get a speaker elected, as we saw last Congress.
And Congressman, do you think anybody else would want the gavel?
Most of the folks I talk to that are super competent and would not want the job. It's, especially with this majority. I mean, it's the hardest job in America. You know that old show, Tough Jobs? I mean, this is the toughest job in America. I am convinced of that.
You could do it, but how much are you going to be able to get done? That's how you're ultimately judged. Governor Chris Sununu joins us now, knows a lot about government, never went to Washington, was tempted last time out to run for president. He didn't, but his dad did, was former chief of staff for George H.W. Bush. Governor Sununu, welcome back.
Hey, Brian, how you doing, buddy?
I got to thank you.
2025.
Thank you for my syrup. You mailed syrup to my house. Thank you very much.
Not that you needed to be any sweeter, Brian, because you're as sweet as they come. I just thought some of my New Hampshire gold would be good on your pinky.
Absolutely. What does retirement feel like?
Retirement? That's no, there's no retirement. If I had it, look, if I was a wealthy guy, I'd retire, but I need a paycheck. I got to pay my mortgage as much as anybody else. So I'm in my last week. The inauguration for the next governor, Kelly Ayotte, will come this week, and then off to the private sector and you know, make a paycheck. But I'll still be out there in the media or doing something, scratching that political itch in some way.
Do you think that you'll go, because your brother didn't go back? I mean, do you think you'll go back in some way?
Not planning on it. I'm really not. I mean, it's public service, not a public career. You got to serve, and then you go back and take care of your family and get back to the private sector. I ideologically believe in that. So I don't know. I'm only 50, which maybe to some people that's old. To me, that's still kind of young. And so I got a couple lifetimes in me still. Who knows?
I hear you. First off, on what's going on with these terror attacks, do you think that overall, when you talk to people, that we've just kind of that mindset of war on terror has kind of left us with George Bush?
Yes, it is. There's definitely less vigilance in terms of the average citizen. You know, this whole, we always say, if you see something, say something, and all of that. I think there's also a little desensitization because of social media and scrolling, and we see all this stuff in clips. Right. And so when we see something, you're like, is this real? Is this happening? No, I'm sure this is a big nothing, but it is something. And so, you know, as much as we want, you got to have the plan. You got to have law enforcement in place. You also need the citizens to be aware of what's going on. And you need, as a government, as those that are kind of, in, you know, responsible for protecting the citizens, mm-hmm. they've got to be on their A game, and not just in New Orleans, not just in New Hampshire, but internationally, mm-hmm. everywhere. There's expats and Americans all over this planet, and there's a sense of security that you have to bring with, you know, provide for them in some sense, even when they're not in, you know, not living here domestically.
Do you think this is the problem? Listen to Merrick Garland.
In the FBI's view, the top domestic violent extremist threat comes from racially or ethnically motivated violent extremists, specifically those who advocated for the superiority of the white race.
What do you think? You think that was helpful?
Idiocy personified. I mean, not only is it not helpful, it's so damaging, because what it tells folks is look over here if you want to see what's dangerous. Don't look over there, right? Don't look at where the real dangers are. Look at this whole subsect that we've kind of carved out politically. Look, it doesn't mean that there's not violence and extremism that exists in that sector. You got to be vigilant on it. But don't take your eye off all these other real top priorities that are out there. And that's where I get this is another one. I mean, have you heard when they start saying climate change is, you know, the biggest threat to American security and all
yeah.
this kind of stuff? It's like, no, protecting American lives. That's what this is all about. You don't just look in one subsect for a political purpose. You really have to make sure that you're doing right by everybody and you know, kind of that big tent global protection system that has to be there.
The other thing, I know the whole thing about the First Amendment, and they can't act emotionally. But, you know that we're an ally of Israel. You know that the Palestinians are very angry about the response to the October 7th attack. And now we have anti-Israeli, pro-Palestinian protesters in the streets of New York City the day after an attack with Hamas and Hezbollah flags. And I'm thinking to myself, I know about free speech, but this is one point. We would never have allowed an Al-Qaeda flag on Fifth Avenue. Why are we allowing the Hezbollah-Hamas flag? These are terrorists. These aren't countries.
These kids couldn't even find Palestine on a map. I mean, literally could not find it.
Yeah.
It's kind of this weird,
but do you allow it?
Subculture.
If this was happening, Governor, do you allow it? If it was happening in New Hampshire, is it free speech? And you tell me. I mean, I think when you have an enemy like this, that clearly has diabolical intentions.
If people want to get out there and wave a flag, I don't agree with it, but you have to allow it. That is the epitome of free speech. Now, if that is now inciting violence, well, now we have clear laws for that, right? And it's the inciting. It's what you're inciting with that. Are they damaging? Are they protesting? Are they burning buildings? Are they inciting violence in some other terrorist way, domestic terrorism style way? That's where you got to be vigilant on it. So you don't ignore it. You got to allow the free speech to happen, but hopefully – What it is, you educate to it. You say, okay, this isn't right. There's a reason why what's happening in Israel and Palestine and Lebanon and Hamas and Hezbollah, who are these groups, who are these organizations, what's the history, and what are their motives, and what is it really based in? And I've always said all of this is based in anti-Semitism. I really believe that very fundamentally. And I'm saying that as an Arab American. It's all based in anti-Semitism and ignorance. And so you get this weird conflict of these two very, I call them dangerous type things, but it can be corrected. But it's on all of us as parents, you know, in our education system. What are we teaching our kids? What are the values that we're representing to that generation? So you got to take that on yourself as much.
I just feel as though people are optimistic because not so much, okay, I'd rather Trump win, or, you know, you'd rather Kamala Harris win. I don't even hear Democrats who are never excited about Kamala Harris, I don't believe. But most of all, they're excited about the fact that logic is back. Of course you enforce your border. Of course you don't allow shoplifting. Of course DEI has got to go. And we're watching this stuff fall down already before our eyes. The DEI, the affirmative action that unbalances our country and tries to inflict guilt on the American people, that whole mindset's done. That's the relief I'm sensing. Do you?
Undoubtedly. It's the number one thing people are excited about going into 2025. And with that, with all of that nonsense coming crashing down, everyone has a sense of the polarization going away, right? The threat of being canceled, the threat of what you might say and how it might be interpreted and how you have to go along with mob mentality. All of that is going away, which means we can just get back to being ourselves. And maybe, just maybe, there's a future here that is a little more like, I'll call it 1997, where you can have good-hearted, you know, good heated political disagreements without hatred and without, you know, making it personal, without it being defining upon your character as a human being. I just don't believe in that. I believe in having a good hard argument, and I love, you know, arguing with my progressive and liberal friends. But the key there is they're all friends at the end of the day.
All
and
right.
We just have to get back to that. And I think with this, dissolving wokeism. Leads to more of that, and everyone just kind of getting along a little better.
And of course, I mean, I can't believe I'm even saying this, getting men out of women's sports, like stuff like that. It's bizarre that I even have to bring this up. But hopefully this stuff starts going away and people see the logic back in America.
Undoubtedly.
Right. So I got to ask you this. I was thinking about this debate, and I actually don't have a problem with it. I watched, you know, Elon Musk and Steve Bannon have a debate on H-1B visas, right, about these elite visas. So you got this great student in Bangladesh. He's killing it in Stanford, does not want to go back, wants to stay here. He's a first-round draft pick, you know, at one of our top institutions. Should they be given special considerations to stay? If it's not abused, I am all for this. Bannon and Ann Coulter, Republicans, conservatives, they don't want any part of it. And I'm watching these guys brawl it out over the week. I'm wondering what Governor Sununu, you are a staunch Republican too. Where do you stand?
I got to be 100% with Elon on this. He's absolutely right. There's no question. You want the best and the brightest being able to come to America and hopefully, you know, staying here, and we can tap into that workforce and tap into the education that we can provide and people that want to work and all of that. Elon's 100% right, not just from an economic perspective, but in terms of what America's all about. I'm a big believer. You stop this illegal immigration nonsense. You seal up that border. You drive everybody through a legitimate port of entry. Make them bigger if you want. I don't care how many people come, to be honest, as long as they're going through, they're being checked, they're coming legitimately. There's a remain in Mexico style policy. There's a remain in your own country while we make sure that we're getting it right. But when in terms of these students, we've always had a robust system, and it's been the foundation of so much of what the country's built on and a lot of the success that we've had. It's why we stay ahead in technology and stay ahead in development and all this other stuff. So I think Elon is 100% right. With all due respect to Ann Coulter and Steve, I don't give a rat's ass about those two. I think they're Republicans, but I think they're both idiots. I really do. On this issue, they are missing the real picture. They're just so stuck in I don't call it xenophobia. It's not xenophobia, but they're stuck in this nationalistic mindset without appreciating what has really built this country over the past 250 years. There's a way to have the right controls, the right processes, make sure it's legal, it's safe, and we're only bringing in the best and the brightest and getting the best out of it for America and American companies.
I'm not sure what kind of visa Einstein got, but I'm glad he chose us, and I'm glad we were smart enough to let him in.
That's a great example. That's a great example, and there's 1,000 more like it, right? It's never going to be perfect, but it is far and away the best system that this planet's ever seen.
So Goldman Sachs took 678, IBM 1300, Microsoft 1200, and 864 for Apple, Meta in 920. So Yeah, these are very successful companies. And I remember Steve Jobs coming out and saying one of the reasons I cannot bring manufacturing back from China is because we don't have the engineers here. So this would be one answer to that, it seems to me, if it's not abused. If I'm not stopping the Sununu kid from getting a job to give it to the to give it to the Norwegian or not the, let's say it like the Kenyan or somebody who's in a country that's economically distressed, someone who wants to stay here. I mean, that's one way to keep an eye on it, to make sure Americans aren't being bumped out of jobs, to pay people a little bit less, whatever it is. But this is when people think immigration, they think zero. I don't think you should be thinking zero. I think you should be thinking legal.
Yeah, it's all about the legality of it, the safety of it. And remember, let's think about this generationally, right? That this next generation is having less kids later in life. We don't have the workforce. There's work ethic issues here. You know, getting somebody to put, you know, getting a 25-year-old to put about 40-hour workday in is tough. A 40-hour work weekend is a quasi-rare thing nowadays. Let's understand where we're going. And let's take a country like India, right? India is a friend to America. They're massive, the largest country in the world. Half of their population is under the age of 30.
Yep.
Think about that. Think about the workforce potential, the education potential you have there with a friendly country that wants to work with you on both sides of the border to make sure when folks come in, we're getting it right, we're getting the best and the brightest. That generationally is an absolute necessity to keep this amazing machine called America work.
So I want to bring you to something else. You know, we're going to get the stories of President Biden and what happened behind the scenes. We're getting some glimpses that they had to prop him up to reduce his workload, not approach him on certain days. Now we get behind the scenes story on Afghanistan. And it seems that Jake Sullivan offered his resignation after everything broke down in Afghanistan. It turns out he had to implement President Biden's vision. Couldn't do it, didn't communicate with anyone effectively, and didn't speak after that. He was in terrible terms with the Secretary of State. When your national security advisor does not get along with your Secretary of State and your president is cognitively addled, how the hell did we last 4 years?
Let's be grateful that we got through it. I mean, in all seriousness, especially I would even emphasize this last 6 months, right? I have very little a doubt that Biden isn't making any of these decisions. And the Biden decisions in the last 90 days have been absolutely awful, but they're not his. He's got a bunch of 20-something progressive staffers that are doing these pardons, that are literally asleep at the wheel, driving everything politically they can, trying to sell pieces of the wall and all that out of political spite more than anything. So I'm grateful that we're only 3 weeks away from an inauguration. I'm grateful that we have this new administration coming in. And I do believe, hopefully, that the damage was minimized. And as you started off this conversation, we're entering 2025 with people feeling, you know, breathing a little better. Not just because Trump won. It's not about that. It's about all of the cancel culture and the polarization is definitely being toned down. There's no question about that compared to where we were just a couple years ago.
And by the way, isn't it great to know we're coming up on year 250 of America? We could actually celebrate it with people not going to apologize for it. So I think that's coming up in 2026. But lastly is this. You were skeptical on Trump. That's why you thought about running against him. You voted for him for a while. You were for Nikki Haley. But you're fair. You're open-minded. Listen, you want him to win. And you did. And that's why CNN stopped booking you. So in my estimation. But is Trump showing you another gear over the last 3 weeks, 4 weeks?
Yes, because it's the team. The gear is all about the team he's putting together. People said he's going to bring in only these wild people and extremists. And I was concerned about that as well. Absolutely. There's two very positive things here. Number one, the people he's bringing in are very, very good. The few people that he has brought in that has questions, the folks in the Senate have no problem standing up and saying, whoa, 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 we're putting the brakes on that. The checks and balance system does work. Matt Gaetz is a great example. I think Matt Gaetz is an absolute fool of a human being. I'm so excited that the Senate stood up and said, there's checks and balances here. You don't get to just put any crazy person in that you want. You know, we're going to take umbrage with that and make sure that he gets moved on. But 99% of the people Trump is putting up are good people. They're from the private sector. They're not politically driven. They just want what's best for America. So from a team perspective, that's terrific. From a checks and balance perspective, it's a sigh of relief for everybody that, did all this fear mongering that he was going to be some type of dictator and all that. Obviously, that wasn't going to happen. And it's being proven even before he's in office. And then the third big win here is look what's happening internationally. right? We're getting closer and closer to a deal in Russia. There's ideas being actually thrown out there, closer and closer to something in Israel. And that's before the guys even come in. So the entire tone from the rest of the world in terms of how America is being perceived is better. It's much better than it was just 6 months ago. So we're 3 for 3. It's a whole new gear. And, again, hopefully that momentum keeps going.
All right, Governor Chris Sununu, good luck in your final 2 weeks. Talk to you soon.
All right, thanks, brother. Be good.
Back in a moment.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I would like to acknowledge a couple of things because I know what's going on in the social media world, and there are a number of things in this case that are similar to the attack in New Orleans. We do know that our subject here served in the military. In fact, he's a current member of the military. Both of the subjects served at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. What we do know about that is it's a very large military base, and we have no record that they served in the same unit or even at the same years at Fort Bragg, something that continues to remain under investigation.
So that is the police chief over in Las Vegas talking about what we know about the explosion. And we know this. This guy was active in the military, 5 Bronze Stars. He had a really good record. We don't see any problems as of right now with his service. Evidently, this is personal. The theory is his wife, who he married and divorced and married again, they had a big dispute on Christmas and they broke up. Since that time, people haven't seen him. He talked about to one ex-girlfriend that he loved the Cybertruck. He feels like Batman in it. Next thing you know, he drove around for about an hour in Las Vegas, pulled through in front of the Trump Tower once, the second time left it, shot himself, and then exploded the car. He evidently loved Trump, although the theory was he didn't. There was a reason why he was there.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, right around the country, around the world. And whatever you want to say about Manhattan, at least I could say that we got the best anti-terror units in the country, maybe better than the FBI, pound for pound. And they've made some alterations to New York City after having a lot of scares. And you go down 7th Avenue and you'll see by Hard Rock and by Times Square, you know, you'll see these poles, these silver poles sitting there separating you from traffic. And if you want to risk and go beyond the poles and kind of walk in the street because it's so crowded, you do that. And I said, okay, let's stop. I didn't realize how often and, you know, how prevalent it is in these ISIS handbooks for aspiring terrorists. They say do something low tech, like get a car and run over people and then have a plan B when you get caught or when the car stops. I mean, that's the type of mindset that we're dealing with right now in this country. So, there's a lot going on. We're also finding out that when it comes to the Las Vegas attack, the explosion, and when it comes to the attack in New Orleans, it looks like they're unrelated. Or ironically, they both served in the same unit roughly the same time. One is a 19-year vet still active. That's one in Las Vegas who's got 5 Bronze Stars, seems to have personal issues. That's what the New York Post is saying right now. Him and his wife broke up on Christmas, drove around for an hour, then exploded his car in front of Trump Tower. He wasn't a Trump hater. His friends say he was a Trump fan. And they say he was a Rambo-style warfighter. So it looked like two horrific incidents, but totally separate. This hour, we're going to be joined by Mary Catherine Hamm. We'll do a simulcast with Stuart Varney. But right now, let's bring in Congressman Mike Lawler. The successful run in a tough race for a House seat that many people think is going to run for governor of New York. Congressman, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Brian. How you doing?
I'm doing really good. You've been a really strong, direct voice for your party. You know, whether Speaker Johnson does everything you want or some of the things you want, you think he's the best choice, right?
No question. As I've said many times, anybody who's ever been married knows you have to find compromise. You're not going to get everything you want. All of us, you know, at times can get frustrated by the process or that something we wanted, you know, for our district or for the country didn't come to fruition. But the fact is that Speaker Johnson inherited a mess, you know, back in October of 2023 when Kevin McCarthy was vacated, and really worked tirelessly to make sure that despite the best efforts of some of my colleagues to screw this up, that we kept the majority. And the fact is, on January 20th, Donald Trump is going to be sworn in as the 47th president of the United States with a House Republican and Senate Republican majority. And that's going to be critical if we're going to be able to get done what he ran on, including addressing the economy and the affordability crisis, securing our border and stopping this mass influx of illegal immigration, increasing domestic production of energy, and bringing about peace and prosperity around the globe. That can't happen if we don't elect a speaker and certify President Trump's election on January 6th. So to my colleagues that continue to feel that, you know, their ego matters more than anything else, put your big boy pants on and get to work. We have too much to do for these type of temper tantrums to be thrown on the House floor.
Understood. Mike, on a separate note, it's a little out of context, but I just got to share it. I'm reading the story today in the New York Post that we are looking, we have a trillion cubic feet of natural gas in New York. Yep. And when I drive upstate New York, and for people around the country, it's like Iowa. I mean, it's really wide open, a series of small towns. Two of my kids went to college up, the three of them went to college up there, and I was going there every weekend for the last 15 years. And I couldn't believe the charm and personality in these towns, but they are economically distressed in most cases. Think about what that natural gas could, what it's done for Pennsylvania and what it could do for New York. They did an environmental impact study and they said no impact. It's going to be okay. But yet these Democratic governors and mayors, they all say we got to stop this. What is your reaction to that?
It's foolishness. Look, upstate New York was the beginning of the Rust Belt. And, you know, over the last few decades, manufacturing has left New York and Appalachia. And, you know, as a result, a lot of these communities have been severely economically hurt. And natural gas is a lifeline for them. And when you look at what New York has done by banning it, it was foolish. You know, Brian, 70% of electricity is generated by natural gas across America. 70%. And if you look at what they've done, where they've blocked pipelines, they've blocked new natural gas power plants, they've shut down nuclear power, and they want everything to be on renewable and electric. The fact is, we cannot produce enough electricity if you're shutting off natural gas. And so everybody's utility bills in New York has skyrocketed over the last few years. Our energy grid is, in fact, dirtier because they shut down Indian Point, which was providing 25% of the region's power for New York City. But look, natural gas is critical. And certainly if I were governor, I would absolutely lift the moratorium on natural gas. It would provide an economic boon to New York and to these communities all across upstate. We have the most spectacular state in the country. People just, you know, oftentimes around the country think of New York as New York City. But we have the beaches of Long Island. We have wineries. We have mountains. We have skiing. We have everything you could imagine in New York. And obviously throughout the course of the year, all four seasons. And so New York is a vibrant place that really just is longing for leadership. That's the fundamental problem.
Is that good? I mean, it's a little early. You're not even serving your second term yet. But when would you make your decision if you're going to run?
We're going to strongly look at it. Obviously, you know, the first 100 days of President Trump's administration is going to be critical. And so a lot of our focus is going to be on what's happening down here in Washington. But, you know, we are definitely going to go about the process of looking strongly at it. I would suspect sometime, you know, middle of the year, we'll make a decision.
Wow.
Whether or not I'm going to run.
Did Lee Zeldin give you an idea that it's possible? Did he show you that?
Absolutely, as did President Trump. Look, you saw significant movement in New York. This isn't about Republican versus Democrat. New Yorkers want common sense. New Yorkers want leadership. They want people who are going to address the challenges facing them most acutely. From the affordability crisis to the public safety crisis, you have people being burned alive on the subway trains, being pushed in front of oncoming subway cars. Meanwhile, the governor is taking selfies on the subway, saying how safe it is. I mean, it's the lack of leadership here in New York is just startling. And so we have a lot of work to do. And certainly, you know, my primary focus right now is what's happening in Washington. But certainly, as we take a look at it, you know, we'll focus certainly what's happening in New York.
Mike Logan, my guest. So there were protests in New York City 24 hours after the attacks in New Orleans and Las Vegas. And there were anti-Israel, anti-American, in my view. There was ISIS and, excuse me, there were Hamas and Hezbollah flags flying right in New York City. Senator Lindsey Graham was asked about that. Cut 10.
ISIS is dedicated to doing three things. Bending every Muslim to their will, purifying Islam, destroying Israel, and coming after us because we're infidels. They're religious Nazis. If you did this in World War II, you'd probably have your ass in jail. If you carried around a Nazi flag and showed sympathy for the Nazi cause during World War II, you'd be committing treason. Tokyo Rose actually went to jail. So did Berlin Betty, I think her name was. So these people are giving comfort to the enemy.
Where does free speech end? And where is, I agree with Lindsey Graham, but constitutionally, are we supposed to allow this?
You know, sadly, obviously, you know, people have the fundamental freedom to engage in this type of conduct. Obviously, I and many others are vehemently opposed to the conduct itself. Part of the reason why I have pushed to pass the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act, because there is a fine line between free speech and when free speech devolves into physical harassment and violence. And the fact that these folks are engaged in these types of threatening protests where they're calling for global intifada, you know, that to me is not constitutionally protected. If you are calling for the eradication of people, that is not constitutionally protected. And so that is something where I think both the governor and the mayor have a responsibility to work with our law enforcement partners and crack down on this crap, because this is not the America that you and I know. This is absolutely a pro Hamas, anti-American, anti-Israel, anti-capitalism, anti-Western democracy, anti-Judeo-Christian values. That is what we are seeing. We saw on these college campuses. It's what we're seeing in the streets. The fact that people would go out there less than 12 hours after a terrorist attack in New Orleans took the lives of their fellow Americans speaks volumes to the depraved indifference these folks have. And frankly, it's time for America to push back against this crap.
I don't want to, you know, the attacks in New Orleans shows an ineptness with local government that makes this one look competent, the one in New York City. I mean, you have someone who's basically days away from being indicted and a mayor that spends her free time going to global climate change conferences while her city rots in New Orleans. And you have her, I guess, her lover, who's a bodyguard, who's under indictment. And then you have money. They literally were told in 2019, build those bollards that are in New York City around Times Square. And they said, yeah, we're going to get to that. We have no money to do it now. Now they're going to do it during the Super Bowl. Too late. That would have stopped that car, that truck from coming by. When you look at the big picture, is part of the reason that we're victims of a terror attack here because of a different focus from this administration overall with Homeland Security?
No question. This administration's incompetence when it comes to Homeland Security, securing our border, preventing those on the terror watch list from coming into the United States. Obviously, the failure of big city mayors and governors, especially in blue states, with respect to public safety, you know, this is a problem, and it's something that I think we, as Republican majorities in Congress and President Trump coming in have to make sure that is priority one for us. The safety and well-being of every American is paramount. And I think, obviously securing the border is part of that. Having a Homeland Security Department that actually takes seriously the job that it has to protect the homeland is critical. And this is why it's so important that the Senate immediately confirm President Trump's national security team. You cannot have a delay in the confirmation process. Our enemies around the globe are watching, and you look at where Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are leaving the world today, it is in a more precarious place than at any point than in the lead up to World War II.
And I hate to put you through this, but I want you to hear what President Biden's focus has been since 2021.
According to the intelligence community, terrorism from white supremacy is the most lethal threat to the homeland today. Not ISIS, not Al-Qaeda, white supremacists.
So people are clapping for white supremacists, which is an interesting crowd you're in front of. Do you believe that he think that? And those are the people he hired.
Look, obviously, wherever white supremacy exists, it needs to be rooted out. But the fact is that President Biden has allowed politics to drive his decision making, from the disastrous withdrawal in Afghanistan when he wanted to have a date certain withdrawal so that he could say that he ended the war in Afghanistan by the 20th anniversary of 9/11, regardless of what the circumstances on the ground were. And we know how that ended in the death of 13 U.S. service members, to how he views combating terrorism. I mean, these are the same folks that believe that parents attending school board meetings were domestic terrorists. This is fundamentally the wrong view. Again, if there's white supremacy, root it out, absolutely. But to say that that is the primary threat in America is just clueless to what we're dealing with.
Just the revelation now came out that Jake Sullivan offered his resignation after the collapse of the Afghanistan government, and it was not accepted. In the story, it talked about it fracturing the relationship with the Secretary of State, Blinken, and that it was totally Joe Biden's idea that Sullivan was offering his resignation because he didn't implement it well. So it shows an incompetent president, a terrible national security advisor, and a fractured relationship with the State Department. And that was in the beginning of his term. What does that tell you?
Look, we had Antony Blinken testify before the House Foreign Affairs Committee just a few weeks ago, finally, at the end of this administration on that disastrous withdrawal. And Jake Sullivan came and testified in a classified setting just 2 weeks ago. Nobody was held accountable. Nobody. And nobody took responsibility in this administration. As I said to Secretary Blinken when he testified and showed him the 300-plus page report that the House Foreign Affairs Committee put together, this is your legacy. This is the legacy of the Biden administration. Everything that has resulted from this disastrous withdrawal is your problem. You created it. You look at the Russian invasion of Ukraine. You look at the terrorist attack against Israel, the threats emanating in the Indo-Pacific mm-hmm. from China. They own it. And this is something that President Trump is going to walk in inheriting, and we're going to have to get to work quickly to bring about peace and stability around the globe.
Thanks so much, Mike Lawler. Best of luck with your decision. Best of luck with your speaker run. Not yours, but the vote.
I appreciate it. Thanks. Thanks, Brian. Happy New Year.
Same to you. Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, we are back. Just a quick announcement. February 15th is coming up. History, Liberty, and Laughs going on stage. I'll have a VIP where I could talk to you 2 hours before, answer your questions, preview the show, talk about what's going to be happening over the next 4 years, especially, and what's happened over the last 20-plus here at Fox. I'll be doing that and also bringing history to life through my history book. So if you care about the country, you want a patriotic night, I hope to see you in person. It's always it's always exciting, especially in Jacksonville, Florida Theater. Anybody in the area, it's an hour and a half from Orlando, very close to Georgia. So hope to see you there in person, BrianKilmeade.com. And then you just click on buy now, and then I can see you there in VIP tickets are available, but I don't have many more left, especially OKV listeners. That great station over in Jacksonville is nice enough to carry the show. Coming up next is Mary Catherine Hamm, OutKick columnist. We want to talk to her about what's happening on Capitol Hill today and also what's been happening in Mar-a-Lago over the last 18 months and what could be happening over the next 17 days. Hearing's going to start in a couple of weeks. And you talk about drama. There's going to be a lot of Democrats who have been flat on their back and want to chomping at the bit in order to go after Hegseth, Tulsi Gabbard, to go after RFK Jr., some Republicans, too. We'll talk about that and what they could all be up against. I see them all getting through. I really do. If they're prepared, and I think they're all going to be prepared. Then we'll do a simulcast with Stuart Varney, the number one show on FBN. That's going to be fun. So don't move. You listen to Brian Kilmeade Show.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Oh, no. You can pull all my fingernails out. You can shove bamboo up in them. You can start cutting off my fingers. I am not voting for Mike Johnson tomorrow. And you can take that to the bank.
That is Tom Massey, who, smart guy, likes DeSantis, didn't like Paul Ryan, and didn't like Kevin McCarthy, although voted for him. But now says that he will not, even though he backs Trump, he says, I will not back Trump's pick to be speaker. In fact, Donald Trump just put out on Truth Social that Mike Johnson has close to 100% support. It would be a great moment after he gets through today. If I could just paraphrase what he said, he's got his full support. Just reiterating that. Word is he did pick up the phone and talk to Chip Roy, who also supported DeSantis. Must not have been easy for him, but he knows. You can't confirm the Electoral College vote on January 6th, if you can't get a speaker on January 3rd, how many rounds it'll take? Hopefully one and done. Mary Catherine Hamm from OutKick joins us now, Fox News contributor as well. Mary Catherine, welcome back.
Hey, thank you very much for having me. Happy New Year.
Same to you. So Tom Massey's out. Do you think Speaker Michael Johnson is going to stay in?
I think it's likely he does only because he must. Right? Like what, when you have Trump's support, when Trump is actively working the phones, that's the part that's interesting to me because often he doesn't do that part. He'll say he supports something, but he doesn't actually do that part. So that part I think is important to this. And as you said, you can't get certified if you can't have the House operating. And so I think that is of paramount importance. And sometimes when these guys, especially with these small margins in the House, when they're up against the wall and they have to do something, that's usually when the thing works more smoothly, finally at the very last moment.
Right. Ken McCarthy cut a whole bunch of deals at the end and,
right.
and giving people chairmanships or promises or promise that. It seems like Speaker Johnson's staying away from that.
Look, I think that's wise. That's what did McCarthy in. And there were things I liked about McCarthy, but certainly that one where you could just have one member decide to take a vote was not a great deal to cut. That was not a thing you should have offered because it made the caucus even more ungovernable. And like, you know, we're conservatives, we're libertarians, we pride ourselves on being ungovernable, but as a part of government, you actually have to do work together as a party to get the things done that you need to get done. Number one is which is certifying on January 6th.
Yeah, it would help. So far, President Trump, to me, has shown me another gear. He showed me that this is a very different president-elect than I saw as president and even when he was president-elect. Am I wrong?
No, I think you're right. And here's the thing that's interesting is that I think Trump works better when he's in a honeymoon phase. And he never got a honeymoon phase before, right? The intel community, the federal law enforcement community had already started its dastardly deeds behind the scenes. The media was already shouting Russia before he came into office. And the American people, unfortunately, many of them responded to those fake news stories that turned out to be made up.
Well, you were over CNN then, right? Were you thinking to yourself there's got to be something to this at the time because of the people you were working with?
No. I, from the beginning, was like, okay, look, I'm open to evidence, but I don't see a lot here. This seems very unlikely. I don't know if the thing you guys keep talking about is real. And it turned out that that was correct. Even it was more fake than I thought it was, at the beginning. But that's because I didn't count on the audacity of the leaders and thought leaders and leadership of America faking it as much as they did. So I think this time around, he does have a bit of a honeymoon. That, of course, is marred by the tragic events of this week and terror attacks. But I think people are very much looking forward to having someone else at the wheel in this country, and he's benefiting from that. And I think his attitude improves when people are looking forward to seeing him work.
Yeah, I think so, too. Just looking at what happened over in Las Vegas, you know, Mary Catherine, I almost remember you from day one talking a lot about the war on terror, where it evolved right from Afghanistan over to Iraq into the killing of bin Laden, the rise of ISIS. We go back, but we have definitely de-escalated over the last few years because we have perceived the threat as lessening. And the focus right with this administration has been elsewhere. Listen to Merrick Garland, May of 2021, cut six.
In the FBI's view, the top domestic violent extremist threat comes from racially or ethnically motivated violent extremists, specifically those who advocated for the superiority of the white race.
Do you think that's part of the problem?
Look, I do think it is, because there are a lot of resources within federal law enforcement, right? They can do many things at once. However, this administration so incentivized looking into only one kind of problem. And like, that's not to say that there isn't some of that problem, but I think their demand as sort of left-leaning social justice warriors for white supremacist terrorism outstripped what exists in this country. So they kind of had to invent things or blow things up that were not as real as they were telling you. And as a result, they took their eye off the ball on some other threats, right? That's not controversial. The left will tell you, oh, no, it's silly to say that they can't do two things at once. Well, if you're incentivizing law enforcement of one kind of thing and letting other kinds of offenses pass, you're going to miss stuff. And sometimes it's going to be malicious and sometimes it's going to be by accident, but your priorities are not straight. And I'm looking very much forward to having somebody at the head of federal law enforcement whose priorities are straighter.
And you know, what's amazing is they're always quick to say, not a terrorist attack. I think to myself,
right,
how do you know? You have to tell me right away. You say, I don't know if it is. But right away they said, not terrorist. The FBI said, this is not a terrorist attack. They quickly walk that back. And I think it's because they see the end in sight and they know they got to get their act together. Here's Christopher Rea, the FBI assistant director. He came out of the gates making this clear that the what they said 24 hours ago was not the same. Cut one.
14 innocent victims were killed in this senseless attack, and at least 35 are injured. First and foremost, let me be very clear about this point. This was an act of terrorism. It was premeditated and an evil act.
And he went on to say it's 100% inspired by ISIS. There's been a reluctance to say that. Why?
This is what's disturbing, right? Especially when you have a crisis of public trust. You have a crisis of public trust because the government looks you straight in your face and lies to you a lot and has over many years, okay? So when that assistant special agent in charge took the mic in New Orleans and she said, this is not a terrorist attack, when, by the way, the internet had clocked the ISIS flag on the back of his truck like 30 minutes after this happened.
Yep.
She made a decision to lie to our faces. You're right. She could have said, we're not categorizing this yet because we are following the facts. That would have been fine with me.
Sure.
But she didn't do that. She chose to lie. And that says to me that a lot of people have been trained to do that, that they know that the incentives are to ignore this terrorism or to deny this terrorism because it doesn't fit the narrative that Merrick Garland, just speaking in the clip you played, had laid out. I think that's what's going on.
It went to the president. I could bore you with a clip like that. But also it went to the military. And if you need some proof, listen to this.
On the issue of critical race theory, et cetera, I'll obviously have to get much smarter on whatever the theory is. But I do think it's important, actually, for those of us in uniform to be open-minded and be widely read. And the United States Military Academy is a university. And it is important that we train and we understand. And I want to understand white rage, and I'm white.
Good. You could have asked me about it. I get angry in traffic, you know. I mean, there are certain things that tick me off, slow service, wrong orders. So, I mean, when you realize that that was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and that was the attorney general and I could play the president, there's no way that doesn't drip into every aspect of the government over the last 4 years. I think the president's being handed a hand grenade, the next president.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And rooting this stuff out is going to be hard. I do think that it's helpful that the American people don't like it, because they look, the people in these agencies hear their leaders talking and know what they're supposed to do. Just like when I was at CNN, like, you knew what message would get you to move up the depth chart, right? You knew what message was going to get you airtime.
Sure.
I chose not to do that, and as a result, didn't get that. But like, telling the truth or being the counter to that doesn't move you anywhere. So if you hear your leader in the military, your leader in federal law enforcement telling you what kind of crime you're supposed to find and what kinds of things you're supposed to emphasize, you will emphasize those if you want a promotion. So Trump is going to be a very different messenger. I think it will change, but a lot of these things are rooted pretty deep, and it does keep us from the actual mission of these agencies, which, by the way, again, this is important. The American people want them to do the actual job of the agency. They don't want them doing this extracurricular nonsense.
And don't tell me that Tulsi Gabbard wouldn't be great at this. I just think she'd be great. And she'll figure it out. My hope is she gets through all this stuff, because I'd love to see her in charge. Mary Catherine Hamm, thanks so much. And don't forget to check her out. Her column's out on OutKick. Go to OutKick.com. Thanks, Mary.
Thank you for having me.
You got it. 1-866-408-7669. I wish I knew what it takes to get airtime at CNN, because they never put me on. Now I know. Stuart Varney's next.
Now, the Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney and Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
All right, welcome back, everybody. I'm about to go on live. You can finally see what I look like in person if you didn't watch Fox and Friends today and Fox and Friends for the last 25-plus years. So I'm going to be talking about the terror attacks, obviously. The Superdome was able to pull off their security measures last night. The game went off flawlessly. I love the USA chants that followed up the moment of silence that was not carried on the broadcast yesterday, mysteriously. I would think after a terror attack, it would be natural, just for broadcasting perspective, not news perspective. Well, let's listen.
10:51 on the East Coast. And guess what? That means Brian Kilmeade joins us. We're lucky. Oh, boy. Brian, greetings to you and your listeners. I want to get to this. Months ago, FBI Director Christopher Wray voiced his concern about ISIS ties to human smuggling networks at the southern border. Listen to this.
Blinking red lights analogy about 9/11. All the lights were blinking red before 9/11. Apparently, obviously, all of us missed it. Would you say that there's multiple blinking red lights out there?
I see blinking lights everywhere I turn.
We are very concerned about the risk of inspired attacks, lone actors here, inspired by some of those same calls for violence from over in the Middle East.
Boy, did he call it. That was back in March. Clearly there have been warning signs, Brian. Should we have been on perhaps more heightened alert?
Actually, does it matter? I mean, obviously, New Orleans is not investing in their infrastructure. They got this historic city. It's definitely going to be one of those targets. You know, you look at New York, you look at Chicago. They responded. Evidently, these security firms came through. In New York's case, they didn't need it. They have people like Ray Kelly and Bratton who are doing their own thing. And it was very effective. And if you walk down 7th Avenue, you can see the bollards sitting up there and preventing you from getting run over at the Hard Rock or in front of Good Morning America. They've really done a really good job. I'm not saying they're perfect, but they're always forward thinking. But you look at New Orleans, I mean, they had these things that wouldn't come out of the ground because people threw beads down there. It was founded, they made it in 2017. By 2019, they're stuck. They got a company they hired to recommend security improvements. They said, fix those things. 5 years later, they said, yeah, we'll do it in time for the Super Bowl. So you could have all the warnings in the world, but you still have a guy in Texas who decides to get a pickup truck and decides to make it a weapon and use some of his army training to start shooting as many people as possible. So that's going to happen. The question is, what are you doing to harden the target? And in the case of New Orleans, ineptness with the police, ineptness with the mayor, especially the previous mayor, Landru, was real strong. This woman's been mired in scandal from the day she took over, spending the city money, going to climate change conferences over in Europe. So this, you can't teach competence.
No, you can't. And even if you could, I'm not sure it would be well received. Yeah. I want to move on to this one, Brian. Donald Trump apparently is going to hold a victory rally at Capital One Arena in Washington the day before his inauguration. I think there is definitely a feeling of optimism with the new administration coming in. And I have a feeling that this victory party will clearly show that. What say you?
I do think so. And I think he's going to have this huge, even though he's not talking about it now. He's done two things that are very interesting.
Yeah.
He doesn't talk about the wall, although he's building it. And he doesn't talk about the size of the crowd, although it's going to be enormous. And even though he wants both things done, I think he's learned from it. The more attention you bring to it, the more time your enemies have to take something that you want. So he doesn't bring attention to it. And I think that, you know, he saw at MSG, that was 99% great. 1% was ill-advised. I think this will be perfect. And I think it'll give people one more chance to be on the same team. My hope is he'll take the themes that he's probably building in the inaugural speech and kind of try it out in a micro version there of all supporters. And I think it'll be great. I think it'll be good to see. And also, maybe we'll get a few cabinet secretaries confirmed by then.
Who knows? 30 seconds, Brian, very quickly. Are we seeing a more, shall I say, finessed Donald Trump on this second term?
Yeah. I mean, the first time there's multiple things gone wrong or somebody screws up, it'll be a test of his temper. But I'm seeing another gear with the president, for the next president, and he's showing it. And I think we're going to see a lot of secretaries take some of the fire and introduce the programs and let Trump step back and let them do their job.
Yeah.
And, because he took everything. He was his own press secretary for a while, remember. Now I think he's going to let people do their job and kind of enjoy it and see the big picture.
Well, I look forward to that. Brian Kilmeade, Happy New Year to you and your listeners. Thanks, Brian.
Back at you and your viewers. Thanks, Ashley. Appreciate it. 1-866-408-7669. And that's what I've been discussing a little with Governor Sununu in an earlier hour, as well as others, that the President Trump is very different now. Number one, I'm not liking it because he's a little harder. He's much harder to interview now. We used to make a request and we'd probably get it pretty quick unless there was something going on with his travel. Now that's not happening. Teresa, you're in Oklahoma. Hey, Teresa.
Hi, Brian. You asked this morning why Joe Biden was questioning the white supremacy act threat in Tulsa, Oklahoma when he came in June. I'll tell you why. He came to Tulsa, Oklahoma to stir racial division in Oklahoma, just like he has across this whole entire country. And he obviously did not read the room before he came here. That was our 100-year anniversary of the race riot, and he only came here to make matters worse.
That's the burning up Black Wall Street.
Soon enough that this man gets out of office.
I know. It's unbelievable. You would think that he'd be that tough with his enemies. He was tough with Republicans. He was never tough with his enemies. He was never tough on Putin. He would never speak like this way to others. He would never rattle the cages of disrespectful allies. But he was really tough talking about Republicans. And he was convinced that America is a land based on racism that might even be stolen, if you ask him. And what he used to talk about is how diverse his cabinet was, not how good they were or how competent they was. Look at the diversity. Yeah, I got a man with a mustache in a dress still in luggage. That's diverse. I never thought it was possible to nominate somebody like that. Brian Kilmeade Show.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome. Brian Kilmeade Show coming your way. Happy to be with you again in 2025. A lot of people coming back on Monday starting fresh. I do not want to miss a minute of this, especially when two horrific events happen like what happened on New Year's Eve. This hour, I'm going to go to New Orleans, where Master P, the successful entrepreneur, fantastic parent, And great basketball player, by the way, and rapper himself, great success story. He is persona. He is the personification of New Orleans, I think, and he's going to be calling us from New Orleans and tell us the spirit in the stadium last night and the spirit in Bourbon Street. Lucas Tomlinson is standing by, so let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
You know, words as much as weapons do shape history. We're seeing a president who talks a lot, but doesn't have the will to do anything about it. We're going to get somebody back who's resetting American dominance in the world for the American people.
And that is General Kellogg, who's in charge of bringing peace to Ukraine and Russia. Make them fear us. As we talk about Biden-Trump transition, that's what immediately has to happen. Our allies must stop taking us for granted, and our enemies must be worried about what we're going to do.
Number two.
You can pull all my fingernails out. You can shove bamboo up in them. You can start cutting off my fingers. I am not voting for Mike Johnson tomorrow. And you can take that to the bank.
All right. Thanks, Tom Massey. Way to be a team player. Show me you've learned something. The speaker vote. Today, moments, will Republicans blow up Johnson like they did McCarthy? I say not only should they keep Mike, but also change the rules that makes it hard to oust Mike.
Number one.
Initially after 9/11, the FBI was in, they were everywhere looking. They caught those guys in upstate New York by doing that human intelligence. But they've pulled back over the past several years, and they need to put that back into place.
I think so. Would Congressman Mark Green with the rich military background. New Orleans attacks and Las Vegas explosion seems like separate events. As more facts come out about their terrorist acts, why I believe we have to go back on the 2001 terror watch mindset. Lucas Tomlinson served in the military. He's a Fox News correspondent, as well schooled in the Pentagon, as well as national security, as anyone you'll talk to. He joins us now. Lucas, your thoughts about, first off, two military members, one still active, being a part of these attacks.
Well, Brian, it's great to join you. Certainly that was the most shocking thing, is not only one Army veteran, ISIS-inspired down in New Orleans, but the fact that you have an active-duty Green Beret, a member of Army Special Forces, 10th Group, stationed in Germany, home base back in Colorado at Fort Carson. The fact that an active-duty Special Forces Master Sergeant, years of experience, 5 deployments to Afghanistan, recipient of a Bronze Star with Valor. He's been in countless gunfights. The fact that he would do this, the fact that he would rent this Tesla Cybertruck and drive from Colorado to Las Vegas, at what point do you have to ask yourself, is there a little voice inside of you that says, maybe I should turn around, maybe I should not keep doing this? And he just went from charging station to charging station. Thanks to Tesla, he can map out the whole route where he stopped, and it's not a good look, and it's certainly just very shocking, because you think this is a patriot. This is a guy who, until he did this, was considered to be a great soldier.
And by the way, the Tesla team has arrived in Las Vegas to try to get, they have 21 cameras inside the car.
Right.
And they're trying to see if they can, you know, recreate or be able to tap into the stream that might have, may or may not have gotten out, and find out what went into this, because he evidently killed himself, then blew up the car. It must have been a detonation situation. But when you looked at when people looked at the bombs that know this stuff, said a guy who is Special Forces should have been able to do something more sophisticated. Not that I wanted him to,
right.
But if you look at these raw bombs, you wonder how those two things match.
Well, thank goodness the Cybertruck is bulletproof, because as you saw with the truck, like, the sides are still intact, the vehicle is intact, everything blew up through the roof. And that's one of the questions a lot of military guys have been talking to, Brian, have been talking about. Clearly this, you know, you don't become a master sergeant in the Special Forces not being expert in demolitions. The fact that, you know, fireworks were used, fuel, it's pretty crude, but it does not seem like, you'd think if he wanted to bring the building down, or at least the front side, Oklahoma City style, he could have done that with his truck. Training. The fact that that didn't happen makes you wonder, is this kind of statement he was trying to make? Clearly despondent if he's shooting himself in the head before this thing goes off.
Right. And you talk about this guy that evidently, according to the New York Post, his wife basically ended the marriage on Christmas.
Right.
And he was personally discontented, drove around Las Vegas for an hour, drove once by Trump Tower, and then went back and blew it up. The other thing I find interesting, Lucas, which is a little surprising, is that he evidently loved Trump. So why would he get the Musk vehicle and blow up in front of Trump Tower?
Well, there's some reporting that his wife didn't like Trump, and wondering, just speculating here, if this was just a message to the world, but there's a message to her. The whole thing is just bizarre. I mean, we're just speculating here on this, but certainly a lot of questions surrounding what would drive this individual who, until yesterday, was by all accounts considered a hero.
So in terms of these situations being related, that was pretty much kicked to the curb yesterday. Here's the Las Vegas sheriff. Cut 13.
I would like to acknowledge a couple of things because I know what's going on in the social media world, and there are a number of things in this case that are similar to the attack in New Orleans. We do know that our subject here served in the military. In fact, he is a current member of the military. Both of the subjects served at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. What we do know about that is it's a very large military base, and we have no record that they served in the same unit or even at the same years at Fort Bragg, something that continues to remain under investigation.
So it doesn't look like they are related. So Las Vegas has a few mysteries, but it looks like they're going to be solvable. And thank goodness it was the Cybertruck. And thank goodness only one person dead and seven wounded, because that number could have been a lot worse. As we look forward, go over to Bourbon Street, and you see this guy. What is your takeaway from this radical Islamist ISIS disciple who decides to do what's in the ISIS handbook? Use your vehicle as a weapon and then have a backup weapon once you get stopped. He did that, and he had IEDs.
Right, and he's a recent convert to Islam. Certainly some kind of self-radicalization just took place. He clearly angry at the world, and sadly, you know, becoming a terrorist is pretty easy in this country if you want to jump in a car and do some damage, and that's what happened. And thank goodness for some quick action New Orleans police officers who shot him before he can do even more damage. But certainly 14 dead, all great, primarily young people who were killed on the eve of the Sugar Bowl, New Year's Eve in New Orleans. You know, most of our listeners have enjoyed themselves on Bourbon Street at some time or other, or should, and it's just a tragedy. Mm-hmm. But this does appear to be self-inspired. You know, normally when there's terrorist attacks like this, Brian, you know, ISIS will take credit. There'll be that message. You've covered this for many years. You normally ISIS would post a message of some kind, get picked up, and the fact that hasn't happened is more proof that this individual acted alone.
Do you confirm, or has it been confirmed, that he went to Egypt for 10 days?
It hasn't been confirmed, but there are reports that he went to Egypt. Of course, that's the home of the Muslim Brotherhood. That's where, you know, perhaps, you know, being a recent convert of Islam, he wanted to go. You know, it's a little harder to get into Saudi Arabia. What he was doing precisely in Egypt is just not clear right now, Brian.
So as we fast forward and go into what's happening in Israel, we understand another higher-up was taken out, one of the architects of the October 7th attack a few days ago. Yesterday, they killed two Hamas members. There might have been some ancillary damage to other Palestinians, but they killed two others. Where are those hostage talks right now? They seem to have stalled.
Right, and this is going to be tough. You know, there's about 100 hostages still being held captive, including some Americans, based on some officials I've spoken to, Brian. About half of them appear to be dead. You have different buckets of people. Of course, you've got women, children, civilians. Then you have Israeli soldiers, and of course, that's going to be the hardest, getting soldiers out, because Hamas considers them, you know, currency. And you know, if they were to give up the hostages, would you know? It's just going to be very difficult to get them out. But certainly you've seen some of this video from the IDF. They launched a daring raid into Syria, not to rescue hostages, but to blow up Iranian missiles that were being made under Bashar al-Assad regime. So there's no question Syed Tzimtkal, other, you know, elite units in Israel are going to continue to get after it. Syed 13, which is Israeli Navy SEALs, they're going to keep hunting for the hostages. But, you know, you have a tunnel system that's, you know, three times greater than the D.C. metro system underground there, so it's not as easy as you know, maybe some might think, but they're going to keep hunting.
Yeah, I guess they're going to keep hunting. And lastly, what is our stance with this new Syrian government? I know they've been engaged with our government, right?
Right. Well, this morning it was interesting. The foreign minister of Germany and France showed up, and the foreign minister of Germany is female, and it was very interesting that the new head of Syria, this former terrorist on the terrorist watch list from the United States State Department, he did not shake her hand, but the fact that he did greet her, her head was uncovered. You know, he's wearing a suit. This is someone who once had a $10 million bounty on his head and was a member of ISIS and Al-Qaeda, or certainly Al-Qaeda's affiliate in Syria. So it's certainly a wait and see. You remember when the Taliban took back Afghanistan, they professed to, women's rights, educate women, they could work, and you see how that turned out. So certainly leaders of Syria who were once considered terrorists are putting on a good show. But they've talked about having relations, peaceful relations with Israel, Brian. So certainly this is something to watch. Certainly it's out of Iran's grasp right now, so it seems. So that's a big win for Israel. There's no question.
And your thoughts about have you heard anything about Russian bases staying there?
The Russian bases are still there, but it's notable they took the warships out. They took their MiG-31s, which fire some of those hypersonic missiles. Some of the big Russian weaponry has been pulled out. That's a very good sign, certainly for the Sixth Fleet, or the U.S. Navy Sixth Fleet, certainly for the West, the fact that Russia appears to be pulling back. What ultimately ends up happening with those bases, just have to see.
All right. Lucas Tomlinson, thanks so much.
Brian, always a pleasure, man.
All right, 1-866-408-7669. I'll come back and take your calls. Meanwhile, at the bottom of the hour, inside New Orleans, how they're recovering with Master P, the legendary rapper, entrepreneur. Don't move.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
If people are telling you who they are, believe them. If they're marching behind Hamas flags and Hezbollah flags, as we saw in numerous New York City protests, you should believe that they are here just to promote violence, just to promote the sort of terrorism that we saw. But yeah, it goes deeper than that in New York. We have a city that really is suffering from a period of decay over the last 5 or 6 years, pre-pandemic, when New York City politicians and New York State politicians passed a series of reforms that basically erased any sense of public order and public safety. The net result is that whether you're on our streets listening to Hamas protesters or in the subway feeling threatened by mentally ill people or Tren de Aragua gangsters, we are on decline.
But it's all self-inflicted. It's easy to reverse. That's Joe Borelli. And you got this governor who walks around pretending as if the subways are fine. And I think the subways, this is the first subway system in America, and I believe it's the most dangerous in America. And they like to say that, well, things are getting better. They're not. I've never seen National Guardsmen ever in the subway. I'm on the subway 3 times a week, probably, sometimes 5. And I never see them down there. And why I bring that up for a national show is because there's a sense of lawlessness. Did you see the video a couple of days ago of just a guy ends up a fantastic person, everybody loves him, hanging out, waiting for the subway. Someone jumps the turnstile, infraction, and then walks over and without breaking stride, waits for the train, without breaking stride, throws him right in front of the subway. Believe it or not, he's got a severe head injury, cracked skull, but he ends up living. And this guy is a persistent criminal. So they do a little crime, jump at the turnstile. What's the big deal? Well, the big deal is he committed a bigger crime. And if you know people who can, without a conscience, commit a crime, and it seems to be a small crime, a misdemeanor, just know they're very comfortable doing a felony, especially when a parent, you get this, the parent's explanation for the guy that pushed the other guy in the train was, I think he got bad marijuana. I mean, what do you say about that? Your 40-year-old dad trying to explain your 22-year-old son's aberrant behavior on bad marijuana. That is a hopeless situation. You got a mayor under indictment, and you got a police commissioner who takes over to find out that at the NYPD, despite their glorious past, their higher-ups now were the second in charge of having people making people have sex with them if they want overtime. You have people there who earn $300,000. So I don't know what that the difference between that and prostitution is. Let me know if you know the difference. So that's the rot that's taking place in the city that Joe Borelli's talking about. But nothing is where they can't be solved. Look at all the fundamentals that are here. Look at in Chicago. You can solve that with a normal, moderate police commissioner instead of this radical that wants to protect illegal immigrant criminals. Here's Lindsey Graham about the protests downtown in New York City that fly the ISIS flag, excuse me, the Hamas flag and the Hezbollah flag. Cut 10.
ISIS is dedicated to doing three things. Bending every Muslim to their will, purifying Islam, destroying Israel, and coming after us because we're infidels. They're religious Nazis. If you did this in World War II, you'd probably have your ass in jail. If you carried around a Nazi flag and showed sympathy for the Nazi cause during World War II, you'd be committing treason. Tokyo Rose actually went to jail. So did Berlin Betty, I think her name was. So these people are giving comfort to the enemy.
So that's what I think. I know about the First Amendment. You should be able to do these things. And I remember they said the KKK cops had to show up. Even black cops had to show up and provide protection for the KKK as they marched in hoods. It was a few times they did that in New York City, I guess, in the 70s. But the KKK was a threat to American security. It was a threat to American civility. And it was an organization. I get it. And the whole free speech thing, I understand it. But would we let Hitler's troops march up and down? I mean, can't we just say that Hezbollah and Hamas are enemies of America? They have the same philosophy, anti-Western philosophy, as Al-Qaeda and ISIS? There's really no difference. And they're calling for revolution. So that's what Lindsey Graham is saying. And he's been on, you know, he's been on the chairman of judiciary. He's a JAG officer. So I understand where he's coming from. When we come back, I'm going to be joined by Master P. We're going to get what it's like on the ground, what it was like last night at the Sugar Bowl, Notre Dame beats Georgia, and also what it was like on Bourbon Street afterwards and before. He's an entrepreneur. He's a self-made superstar, and he's going to be with us, self-made rapper superstar, and he's going to be with us shortly. Also, by the way, played briefly basketball, professional basketball, and still talked, last time I talked to him, thinks he could do a better job running the Pelicans than the current coach, and I don't believe it. He thinks he can get Zion to play. That'll be interesting. If you just give a guy $15 million, you just want him to play. Doesn't want to do that, but I digress. Master P next. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. As you know about the tragedy and that terror attack that took place in New Orleans on New Year's Eve, 3:30 in the morning. That's something that maybe some of you are listening right now and said, I remember I went to Bourbon Street. I was in the French Quarter. Other people live there. They call it their home. That's my next guest, Master P. Percy joins us now, rapper, entrepreneur. Fantastic dad and a heck of an athlete, by the way, who is synonymous, in my view, with New Orleans. Percy, welcome back to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Oh, thanks, Brian. How you doing, my brother?
I'm doing good. It was not too long ago when you were in talking about all your cereals that you put out, the rapper cereals. Those were fun times. This is not a fun conversation. When did you hear, how did you hear about the explosions?
I mean, people start calling me like right after it happened. And I'm the ambassador of entertainment for the city of New Orleans. So it's just an evil tragedy, man, that I don't think no city is prepared for this. This could happen anywhere. And I feel like, Brian, like a lot of this stuff is dealing with mental illness. Like when you hear something or you see somebody's not right or somebody's speaking out, I think we got to be able to take this stuff serious. I start seeing all the stuff that was posting up on Facebook about this guy, and I'm like, man, we got to take some of these things more serious. And my prayers goes out to the family or the loved ones that that lost their loved ones, and this just was innocent people that just didn't deserve that. From 18 to 63, we hear now is the ages of the victim that lost their lives, and then the ones that been injured. I mean, they was just out celebrating New Year's like any other day in any other city, and this is a terrible tragedy for our city, but we're going to bounce back. And I know a lot of people look at New Orleans and the way we celebrate. I mean, Brian, you've been down there.
Oh, like, yeah.
We have second lines in the middle of the street. So I know when people see us second lining and walking through Bourbon Street and they thinking, you know, these guys are already back. No, we back physically, but mentally we've been through so much. And this is the way we grieve down there. It's like, you know what? We're not scared. We're not afraid. Whoever live got to keep this going. And I feel like that's what the mayor, and that was the message that we was able to send to the world from Bourbon Street, to be able to walk down Bourbon Street and celebrate with the ones that been through this horrific, evil tragedy. But we got to show the world that we're not scared, mm-hmm. and we're not going to let them just stop us from surviving and living, because the ones that are alive, we still have to live as we pay our condolences to the ones that are gone.
And the thing is, too, I mean, you're going to have the Super Bowl there in a few weeks, Mardi Gras right after. And when you walk the streets, sometimes you go and, you know, sometimes people get a little wild. There might be some fights in the French Quarter, but that's it. When you walk the streets, they're so narrow, so, so historic. Did you think you guys might be susceptible? Did you ever think to yourself, we might be susceptible to some drunken driver or in this case, a terrorist coming down here? Did you ever think you'd see a truck barreling down the road?
I don't think nobody ever think of that, the negative things that are happening or the devastating things that happen. This could happen in New York. This could happen in California. This could happen in D.C. This could happen anywhere. And we know we have the Super Bowl in New Orleans, but this is not going to stop us from living. And I feel like now what the government have set up and that we are on guard now for these large events, to where the things that has been put up to protect the people, mm-hmm. from driving down and doing things like this. I feel like the government has stepping up, and New Orleans is probably one of the most safest places to hold like a Super Bowl with the NFL, to hold Mardi Gras, and then to hold Essence and any other festivals that are coming to New Orleans. I feel like the spirit is going to keep going, but we're not going to forget the ones that lost their lives in this tragedy. But we will hold up, and we will come back stronger and bigger and better. But we have to not forget about the innocent people that lost their lives. And so it's like we going through something that we have to get over, so the rest of the world can get over this tragedy too, because this has infected the whole country of the U.S. We talk about us as people.
I know, but then we watched last night at the Sugar Bowl, and what was it like there in the Superdome?
I mean, to be honest with you, we had a moment of silence for the people that lost their lives, and the governor stepped up. The people from the community has stepped up, and I mean, we had a great Sugar Bowl as well. I mean, the dome was packed, and people are not letting these evil spirits stop us from living. And I think that's what the Sugar Bowl was about last night. We're not going to let these people stop us from still being able, because think about it. You have kids, you have relatives, even all the tragedies you've been through, we still have to keep moving. And I think that's what the message was, reopening up Bourbon Street and having the Sugar Bowl game. Like, we're not going to stop. We're going to keep going. And that's what life is about, until we fix these problems and these tragedies that we have to go through. We're trying to figure out some type of healing process, Brian, to where mental illness is real. Like,
the thing is, Percy, I feel the same way. When if you become an ISIS member, I think you're mentally ill. You become a member of Hamas, you know, Hamas, Hezbollah, Al Qaeda. But this guy, he went to the military. and he serves in the military. Then he goes on hard times, bad relationships, goes over to Egypt, becomes a radical, and decides the best thing for me to do is to get my rifle, build some IEDs, get an Airbnb, go rent a truck, and kill as many people as possible. So,
well, but that's why we can't, Brian, I feel like we can't give these people no exposure because that's what they want. I feel like when you're looking at ISIS and you're looking at these type of things, they want that exposure. That's why we still have to show up and not be in fear and be out there with our loved ones and show these people these evil spirits are not going to stop us in America. Like, I love that we are stronger together. We're standing up together, and we just got to spread that hope through every part of the United States, knowing that we're going to be able to live and enjoy our families by the time that we have on this planet, and live the best lives that we could live instead of living in fear.
I want you to hear what the superintendent said a couple of days ago when asked how that truck got around the cop car and got on the sidewalk.
This particular terrorist drove around onto the sidewalk and got around the hard target, where he did have a car there. We had barriers there. We had officers there, and they still got around. Now, the wedges that you see out there as well, we knew that had malfunction problems. And I want you to understand, let's say we put the wedge up and it got stuck. There is no way that ambulance could get in or out. People couldn't get in and out. So we knew that these were malfunction. So we did indeed have a plan, but the terrorist defeated it.
So that was the explanation. You as a resident, Master P, and you said Ambassador of Entertainment. Is that good enough?
Now, you know what? To be honest with you, we can't blame people, nothing is good enough because this is unexpected. And that's why we have to keep praying. We got to keep our trust and faith in God. And in February 6th, Brian, we're definitely going to put a memorial up for the ones that lost their lives on Canal Street with our NOLA Walk of Fame. And we're not going to forget what we've been through. And we're talking about being safe. I feel like now, I mean, for every city, it's horrible that we had to go through this in the city of New Orleans. Mm-hmm. But this is not going to stop us, and this is not going to stop any other city that has large events. Like, we still have to live life. And we know that these are evil spirits. And so when you got evil spirits, people could do something. I mean, we're seeing this stuff happen in different places at a smaller level. But it's just that now we have to figure out how to keep going. We have to figure out how to create most safety measures for our people in the places that large crowds are going to gather in. So, man, we're down here. We're constantly praying, and we're getting with the government here. And I feel like the NFL is going to support the city of New Orleans for the Super Bowl. I feel like the people are going to come together, and we got to restructure and rebuild to be able to keep our city and our country going. Because once these evil enemies think that they have destroyed us, then how do we live as American citizens? And so we can't live in fear. We have to protect ourselves. We know that the government is there, and they see, you know, we learn from everything that we've been through. And I feel like we're going to bounce back as a country, not just as the city of New Orleans.
Yeah.
I feel like everybody across the country now is going to start looking, okay, how do we protect the people? Because that's the most important asset.
Exactly.
Of our country, of our people.
And how close? I mean, I was been with you where you grew up. I see where you are now.
Yes.
You know, this is your hometown. It could easily have been one of your kids out there on New Year's Eve, right?
Yeah. It could have been anybody. We lost a guy with the elderly home that we support with TeamHopeFoundation.org. The 63-year-old guy is from our program. And so we have been affected close by this. So we know we watched a 18-year-old girl sneak out the house, and she didn't know that it was going to be her last day. And my message to anybody that's listening to us and watching, love your loved ones no matter where you are. We have to know that you could walk out that door and never come back. So that's why we have to keep going. That's why we got to keep spreading love through all this hate and leave hope for us. And so today is just about love, Brian. Like, we getting up with that spirit of love to say, you know what? We're not going to let these terrorists, these evil spirits stop us from living, because then we lose. I mean, we are winning because the ones that are alive are getting up and doing the right thing. And then we're going to protect our families and protect our loved ones even more. We're going to protect our country even more. We're going to make it even safer. And I think that the rest of the cities are going to learn from this evil tragedy that we had experienced in New Orleans. And we're going to be more prepared to be able to enjoy ourselves, because we still have to, as long as we live, we still have to be able to, we got to go to graduations, we got to go to weddings, we got to go to concerts, we got to go to, because we still want to be able to enjoy life.
But Percy Miller, our guest, Master P, just got to ask you this. I understand your police force is way down in numbers, right? It's got to be cool to be a cop again. What is your message to people that want to get into law enforcement, knowing people have stopped calling 911 in New Orleans? That's how, because they just say, unless it's the most extreme emergency, we're not going to be able to help you. How do you change that?
Well, the way we change that, you see what happened. We have trained professionals in the city of New Orleans, which is our police department, right, which they cut the numbers down. But those police wasn't afraid to put their life on the line, because we probably would have lost more people if them police didn't do they was taught to do. And so, I mean, if you're going to be a police officer, be a great person, have integrity. And when you put that badge on, use it as a badge of honor and protect these cities and protect our country. So we definitely need more police. I feel like they're not paying the police the way they should be paying, and it's less of police. And I feel like the government is going to change that now, and to make that to where, you know, because a lot of people think that the police are bad, or we don't need the police until a tragedy happened. And we got a real experience in the city of New Orleans to realize that, you know what, we definitely need more police to be able to make our community safer. And when you look, when you watch those videos, who do you see running to our help? It's the police, and they're putting their lives on the line. We just want to make sure we have good people behind those badges.
I understand that. Percy Miller, thanks so much. Master P, the Ambassador Entertainment in New Orleans, leading the fight to get everybody back on Bourbon Street and making sure security is worthy of the celebration. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it, Percy.
Yes, thank you, Brian.
You got it. Back in a moment.
Educating, entertaining, enlightening. You're with Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
So our reporter on the scene in New Orleans gets this. Said that they learned not only did the city have barriers available that could have prevented the attack, but the police chief wasn't even aware they existed. The CEO of the Meridian Rapid Defense Group confirms to us that the company sold 48 Archer barriers in New Orleans in 2017. There are barriers the city just installed on sidewalks around the French Quarter before reopening in Bourbon Street. He tells us there's 700 pounds. They're L-shaped steel barriers that would have stopped all these trucks. They don't look great, but they would have worked. Do you know anyone who goes, yeah, I went to Bourbon Street, but I didn't like the big yellow things? I mean, makes it worse. You didn't get these other bollards that were put in place in 2017. They stopped working in 2019 because beads got inside them. Seriously. And then a company comes by and they said in 2019, you got to fix that. It's too dangerous. In 2024, they said, we're going to fix it by the Super Bowl. So 5 years later, they're going to fix it in 1 month. And in between that, the attacks were happening, even though it was everyone was warned, look out. Marianne, you're listening on WOKV in Jacksonville.
Hey, I was saying you had Mayorkas on and had a quote from him, and then you had the other gentleman on whose name I don't remember, and they said they couldn't have picked up that he did this. But think about it. If you get on Facebook and you put fungus cure, what happens? You get 5,000 notes from ever. And if my husband puts something on his Facebook, it comes up on mine. So can't they get an algorithm? I don't know what they are. Some
algorithms.
Kind of something. Yeah, so somebody put something like that out. He put the first one out at 1 o'clock. Heaven knows he might have put it out earlier, and they don't know, that it would click right away. Like, somebody picked that up. They click everything else right away. So that's what I was saying. Yeah, and my office doesn't know what the hell's going on.
Right, Marianne, it's true. He just had committed. He put those videos on tape en route to the attack on the 31st. So Mayorkas was saying, not with me, but he was saying with Sandra Smith, well, what do you want? It just went up that day. The other stuff that they had posted online was about real estate and nothing to do with terror attacks. But on the way to doing this, said, hey, by the way, I was going to kill my family, but I thought it would take emphasis off the fact that I'm a radical ISIS guy and I'm doing this for ISIS. So clearly, then he takes his time, gets an Airbnb, brings up two cell phones. We'll look at those cell phones, and then makes up two detonation devices and then two IEDs that he wanted to go off at separate times after he knew he'd be dead. So this is a guy who's radicalized beyond you would think possible, but he was able to have the rationality about him to be able to put together bombs and put together a plan and have the composure to be able to pull off his diabolical scheme of killing innocent people. And that's his goal. And that's the goal of all these guys. Please tell me how you sell that. Yeah, how do you sell that to people? By the way, OKB, everybody there listening, February 15th, I'll be in town, Florida Theater. Hope to see you there. BrianKilmeade.com, History, Liberty, and Laughs.
Fox News Audio presents the Fox Nation Investigates podcast, The Biden Files.
A person's final story can be told through their bodies in an autopsy.
World-renowned forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Biden covers three incredible cases where he helped change the course of the investigation.
Sometimes it takes more than one look to put the pieces together.
Listen and follow starting January 7th at foxtruecrime.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.